Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, assistant professor of systematic theology, Dr. Ronnie Kurtz.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. I was in mourning just for like a day from the Super Bowl.
I thought about you.
I was glad that my prediction came true.
That was insane.
That they would be in it. I wish that maybe I had predicted they would win. And I wonder if that would
have affected things. If you would have just taken it a little further.
Yeah, I know. If I could have named it and claimed it. But
I mean, those poor Patriots fans had to suffer through an entire rebuild, you know, to get back to the Super Bowl.
That's right, a 3-4 year
rebuild. I mean, that rebuild, I mean, rebuilds are hard, you know. Yeah, yeah. You guys, you made it through one.
No, I'm picking up on the sarcasm, but it was it was okay because it was May's second year and Vrabel's first.
Oh, yeah.
And no one expected him to be in it.
Yes.
And we got through 3 top 5 defenses in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And everybody wrote us off. And I know everyone enjoyed seeing them lose. But it was, to me, it was like, aside from actually winning the big game, everything else was upside.
Yeah.
Like, the future looks good.
Of course.
They got to shore up some things and, you know, get some experience and maturity. And it also helped, I think, that it was kind of a boring Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It wasn't one of those where, like, they got so embarrassed. Mm-hmm. I mean, they did not play well, but it wasn't like a total blowout, shutout, or whatever. People aren't going to really remember, you know. But beyond Seattle fans, who's really remembering this Super Bowl? It was not really spectacular. So that's a relief, too.
Yeah.
You know.
Look at you guys. I mean, you had a lot of reason for
optimism. There's so many Super Bowl appearances, like, you can't win them all.
That's right.
You know?
Exactly.
It's a good problem to have. Did you have fun? Did you have a Super Bowl party?
I did. I hosted one.
And you hosted one?
Yeah, that's okay, right. Hosted one, had some friends over, and I'm a football guy, so I really want to, like, zone in.
Yeah.
So I had to, like, think about, like, double lane. There's going to be 3 other football guys like me who want to, like, watch. And then also there's an outer party for everyone else who's there, you know. So
but
it was good.
I'm skittish about that as well, because I never know, like, if you're at a Super Bowl party, some people are just there to socialize and not watch the game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so Becky and I thought about having some people over. In fact, we have a number of Patriots fans in our church, and we thought about maybe having them over. But we decided just to watch it ourselves, you know. I wasn't super optimistic about them winning, so I was like, I don't want to have a party and then be like, everybody go home. You know what I mean? This is the worst.
Yeah, that's right.
And I knew that there would be people gloating, you know.
Yes, if that is Patriots not fans. Fun. So. It's different when you don't have a dog in the fight, which is where I was.
Oh, yeah, and you're just enjoying
it's
the
like, yeah.
You know, but I still would want to watch the game, even if it wasn't.
Oh, same. That's how I was,
teams that I care about, I still am invested in the game.
Yes.
Yeah. The commercials are getting worse.
Yeah, I was just like, okay.
I mean, I think we have said that for 10 years now.
Yeah.
I don't know why we care about Super Bowl commercials anymore.
Yeah.
Because they're not really
the track record is not there.
And they're not, you know. It used to be, I think, a hard and fast rule was, if you want a good Super Bowl commercial, you put a monkey in it. It's I'm not kidding. You put a monkey in the commercial, it's funny.
Yeah.
It's watchable.
They can teach you how to open a banana.
They can show you how to open stubborn bananas. But I don't remember any monkeys.
Yeah.
And so, but there used to be like multiple commercials. You could watch the Super Bowl commercials and multiple products and companies had monkeys in their commercials.
This is amazing. Like, I would
it's
never.
Gold. If I was a marketing guy and I was sitting down or at an ad agency, I was like, you know what?
I don't care what we do.
Chimpanzee, whatever you got. If you do it, it's going to be gold.
I want listeners.
There were 2 commercials with the Backstreet Boys. Like, what are we
doing?
That
is weird, yeah. I want listeners to, like, tweet at us or email us or something. I want them to guess what you're going to talk about in the next intro. It's impossible to know.
What do you mean?
We've done like 100 episodes together, I still am like, what Jared's going to use for intro banter? Only God knows.
I've gotten some feedback on the banana story.
That
thing really took off. I didn't really think it would be that big of a deal. In the moment, I just thought, here's something to talk about. I didn't expect that to be its own bit or its own
Hopefully
segment.
The feedback
I've heard
was.
Of people like listening to it at night in bed in their earbuds and laughing and waking people up. I was like, I didn't really.
Wow, ruining marriages there.
That's right. I didn't think it was that funny. You have to figure out, right, which banter info is or material is worthy of the podcast.
Yeah. You know, normally I'm not a huge podcast guy.
Yeah.
And I'm especially not a podcast guy when there's a lot of banter at the beginning.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But
I prefer.
I know you do because you like to listen to real humans, and I'm just a information
just a
robot.
Yeah.
But when you do it, I'm like, I'm even a part of it, and I'm just sitting here watching the magic. You know, it's a show, man.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you got to prioritize. I'm looking down at 4 episodes of planning, and I'm like, what's the banter? And you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel, so you kind of like prioritize.
So bananas, huh?
Yeah. Right. You know, this will work. Maybe this will come. You know. And speaking of prioritization,
no way. Incredible.
That was good, though. That's the guy that's like throwing the ball up for himself. And
I wasn't even like, I thought you were actually just telling, but man, that's
we're
good.
Talking about theological triage today.
Yes, prioritization. Wow.
I think we've talked about this before on the podcast. Maybe in.
You and I did not. You had Gavin Orland on once.
That's right. Yeah. With his book, Finding the Right Hills to Die On, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had Dr. Orland on talking about theological triage, but we've never done sort of a organic home field advantage episode on the subject. And you wanted to talk about it. I'll ask you for your motives there. Why are you so interested in theological triage? But let's talk about what it is, because there are probably some who even saw the title in social media or what have you, or just in their podcast feed and thought, what is that? Is this episode for me? And the answer is yes. It's really for every believer to be able to do this. Why don't you explain what theological triage is?
Yeah, theological triage, the way that I explain it to my students, and I think this can be helpful, is after we go through like all of the ologies, so like soteriology, ecclesiology, eschatology, all of the like areas of doctrine, I like to ask them the question, do you have to care about all of these the same way? And in some ways, we should always care about what the Bible talks about. Whatever the Word of God addresses, we should care about that as Bible people. In another way, we shouldn't treat all doctrine the same in terms of kind of the veracity we bring to the subject, the heat that we bring to the subject. And theological triage is a way, I think, a wise way to kind of think about how different doctrine varies in terms of, I don't want to say in terms of importance, but the way that I like to think of it is what's at stake. So triage, you can imagine we separate doctrines into 3 categories: primary doctrines, secondary doctrines, tertiary doctrines. The way that I like to teach it is asking the question, what is at stake if we disagree about doctrines in these categories?
Yeah.
So for example, for primary doctrines, I say what's at stake there is salvation or orthodoxy. So you cannot, if you and I disagree about one of these doctrines, it's likely the case that one of us is a Christian and one of us is not. Or that one of us is orthodox and one of us is not.
Yeah.
So even by that definition, you should already feel there shouldn't be many things in that category.
Right.
So that's primary. What's at stake is orthodoxy. Secondary, what's at stake is fellowship. So you and I can disagree about it, and neither of us have to be non-Christian. However, it's probably significant enough we're not going to stay at the same church.
Yeah, we'll be at different churches.
That's right. We're going to break fellowship over it. So there's not a breaking of salvation or orthodoxy, but there's a breaking of fellowship.
This would be like the difference Presbyterians and Baptists.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So like if they're affirming first order things.
Yes, that's right.
I can affirm the Christianity of my Presbyterian brother, but I can't do church with him.
Exactly.
We have differences of views on baptism,
that's
for
exactly
instance.
Right. Yeah. And then tertiary, what's at stake in tertiary doctrines, in my opinion, is preference. So we can stay at the same fellowship, but one of us is probably not going to get our way, and that's okay. We can stay in the same church, and one of us is going to have our preference is what's at stake. So orthodoxy, fellowship, preference. Doctrines can fit, theological ideas can fit in one of those categories. So, I mean, a quick example would be something like, I think something like the divinity of Jesus would be a primary doctrine,
right,
such that you cannot capitulate on that and remain a Christian. Then baptism, you gave that example. That's a great secondary doctrine. We could have different views, credo baptism versus paedo baptism, believers versus infant baptism, and not have to denounce each other's faith, but say, hey, while I affirm you as a brother, that's a big enough difference.
Yeah.
I have a 2-year-old. I'm probably going to keep him away from you and water. You know,
we're
probably going to fellowship at a different church. And then tertiary is, hey, if you have a preference about music or a preference about, you know, a particular sermon style or, I mean, there's so many things we could think of as tertiary.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I think sometimes even like views, you know, the particulars of eschatology.
Yeah, particulars, you know, of eschatology, some spiritual gift stuff I would put tertiary.
Right, right.
So anyways, that's kind of the basic definition.
Yeah, okay. Problems arise when we conflate,
yes,
between those orders. And maybe, you know, some churches, I think there are some churches or church, you know, denominations who would move what we might would consider third order doctrines or third tier doctrines into the second tier in, yeah, particular, and sort of define fellowship around that, which is their, you know, prerogative to,
that's,
do.
Right.
But there is some, I think, I don't know what the word would be. There's more transfer. There's more sort of between second and third, I think.
Yes.
Where some churches may say, so for instance, there are, you know, some, you know, denominations who say, hey, like we are, it's part of our identity, part of our confession is like we're dispensational.
Mm-hmm.
And so like to be a member of our church, you have to affirm dispensationalism, mm-hmm, or, you know, the pre-trib rapture or something like that. Whereas in, you know, most of the churches that probably you and I have been members of, we would say we have members who would believe that, but we have not made that,
that's right,
a defining or an organizing principle of our church. It's one, you know, one reason, not the only, that I really appreciate the Baptist Faith and Message,
yes,
is how open-handed it is on those third order, mm-hmm, issues, right? We must affirm that Christ is returning,
mm-hmm,
that there will be a second coming. The timing of that, mm-hmm, right? You know, pre-trib, post-trib, mid-trib, amill, mm-hmm, you know, all of that. Like, you can have a diversity of views on, mm-hmm, that within the same local church.
Yes.
And I think that's a strength.
Yeah, I think the BFM, yeah, 2000 in particular really nails triage,
right,
in many ways. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And that conflation, there is, this is not technical theology terms here, but like, if we can just be honest, like if you want a one-way ticket to obnoxious town.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Just a visit. I want to see.
Make tertiary categories primary.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think between second and third, or pushing third into second, I think you're running into some trouble, but there's more. I think it's
malleable.
The skids are greased a little,
that's
more,
right,
I think.
That's right.
It's when you push third or second, but into the first tier category,
yes,
that you're sort of entering really almost even like the irony is we're being you know, trying to protect first order stuff, but it's actually
yes,
you're entering either heterodoxy or even heresy.
That's,
or, you,
right,
know, to, you know,
yeah,
to,
I mean, to use,
legalistic
category, to use more like,
you're
actual,
not a real Christian unless,
yes,
you're,
that's right,
you know, a premillennialist.
And even
or
in
something,
that,
yeah,
that phrasing, which is, that's what third into first does.
Yeah,
it is a form of, to use, you know, actual, maybe what we would say in writing, less joking, but making third tier doctrines, tertiary doctrines, primary is a form of theological Pharisaism or, you know, kind of a legalism with,
yeah,
theology, but conflating the opposite direction, making primary doctrines tertiary,
right,
is theological liberalism,
yeah,
as if we can play fast and loose with some of these major Christianity-defining doctrines. Both of those are just not being wise with the triage model. And so that's one of the things I like to inform my students about is, I think theological triage is a good model. I think it's helpful. But I really think it's all about wisdom in using it.
Yeah.
Because that's where there's no list out there. Nowhere in the Bible does it say, thus saith the Lord, these are the primary ones, these are the secondary ones.
Yeah, well, the pushback often is everything's primary. If it's in the Bible,
yeah,
it's a primary doctrine. And theological, I mean, I've heard this criticism. This isn't just me setting up a windmill for us to tilt at. They will say, like, there's no division like this in the scriptures. We are told, that. You know, scripture, you know, is profitable for reproof. And,
yes.
And so we don't have the liberty to say, well, that's a less important, or,
yes,
that's a, you know, a second tier,
mm-hmm,
that it should all be first tier.
Mm-hmm.
What, You know, Paul in Romans 14 talks about disputable matters.
That's right, yes.
Which it is an odd thing for an apostle, divinely inspired, to write scripture, at least on numerous occasions, to say, hey, some things we don't need to hold so tightly. Mm-hmm. So we have some biblical sort
and
of,
even, you know, I delivered to you of what was first importance.
Yeah, in 1 Corinthians 15.
Yep, 1 Corinthians 15. So I don't know that I would go so far as to say that the idea of theological triage is explicitly biblical.
Yeah.
But I do think it's implicitly biblical. I think it's wise.
Would you put theological triage?
In the triage. Probably tertiary.
Tertiary.
Maybe Whoa. Secondary. Yeah.
Triage just got.
But
owned.
Where would you put that triage in triage? We're getting
Whoa.
Triage inception
it's
here.
Triage inception. Okay.
I think that wise, like, hey, use this model, but be wise about it is helpful. And one of the things I like to press is ranking the doctrines, primary, secondary, tertiary, is not a statement of importance. There are many things that I would put in tertiary categories that I find to be very important.
Yeah, that's right, right.
It's not a ranking of importance. We're ranking what's at stake.
I mean, I think in some cases, Reformed theology
would put it in
tertiary.
Yes.
But that's super important to me.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, Reformed theology means a lot to me. It has been a balm for my soul. It's a comfort for me. And there's some ways in which it bumps into secondary at times, depending on how a church practices it. But I would typically put it in tertiary, but it's important. Now, one of the things I like to make sure I even testing my own soul is, does my temperature match the level of doctrine that I'm talking about? Because it is, I mean, social media is one exercise in speaking about tertiary matters with primary temperature. And there is a reason theology gets a bad name because of this, where people are like, man, you guys are, the heat is always so high and the light seems to be low. There's way more zeal than there is wisdom. And so triage is a way for me to like take my own temperature of, is the tone, the posture, the way that I'm talking about the other person and their ideas, does it match the consequences of these ideas?
Yeah. I think you're right. I think we could have a lot more charity, kindness, the fruit of the Spirit, if we were able to make these distinctions, not just on social media, but in real life. Some of the like the angriest or just most hostile, critics that I've encountered, even in real church life. I mean, I'm thinking like of a fellow who was really kind of infiltrating. I mean, he was a false teacher, but he was, you know, infiltrating my church in Vermont, or trying to anyway, before we kicked him out. And his thing was so inverted because we didn't speak in tongues, because we didn't hold to the dietary law. We were heretics, and yet he denied the Trinity.
Wow.
And, you know what I mean? He kind of had like a oneness Pentecostal.
That's
kind
a
of
great
thing. And I'm like, man, you just inverted the whole pyramid here.
Yeah.
And you're it's like you have when the heretic is calling someone a heretic. And he was just so fierce. Not able to kind of sort these things out. And I think being able to, as you said, like the higher you get in the orders, that's the more, vigorous.
That's right.
And, that we ought to be. And certainly the ability to do theological triage, I think, should affect our speech, our conduct.
Yes.
But it doesn't get clicks.
Yes.
If you're a calm, kind,
get-along
gang kind of guy.
Hey, come on.
Come join
us.
Come on.
In the get-along gang.
Neither one of us are blowing it up on social media.
It does
media
not get
days.
Clicks, I will tell you that. But it does give you a peaceful soul at night, which is nice.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. A couple of nuances that I like to give my students when thinking about... I keep referencing my students, but we did theological triage just a few months ago, and so it's kind of in my head, but...
We get it. You're a teacher.
Yeah, that's right.
People
this is what I do
you.
For
we
a
get
living.
It. You
yeah.
Get it.
I like to make a few nuances that I think help aid the wisdom of using triage. So one is theological triage is luxury, meaning what you consider secondary right here in Kansas City, Missouri, is probably not what you consider secondary in Pakistan.
Okay.
And there's going to be some overlap. But us having all of these things of saying like, I would break fellowship over that doctrine, or I would break fellowship over that doctrine, or I would break fellowship over that doctrine. Well, we can do that because there's 30 options within a 10-mile radius of us.
Yeah.
But if you're in Pakistan and you find a gospel preaching church that might have a different view of baptism, you're probably going to link arms.
I would say not even just Pakistan, but there are places in the United States.
No, that's right. Yes. I mean,
like rural New England and other places, like if you find a place that's preaching the Bible and actually believes it and preaches the gospel, you might, you know, jump in there because there's not a church that's, you know, following to a T all of your preferences.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So I just want to name that of there's a way in which triage is luxury. I don't think that means it's wrong, but I do think people need to have that category of contextualization of like, well, if you have 40 doctrines in your secondary category, you're just going to be hard to please.
Right.
And depending on where you are, you might need to have to give on some of those. I want people to be convictional, but I want that to be a part of it. Another nuance I think is helpful is there is a serious difference between ignorance and denial. And what I mean by that is sometimes I'm worried
an accidental
when
accidental heretic.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
There's times where I get worried when I teach triage that I have now just equipped my students to go be heresy hunters of like, oh, you're capitulating on a primary doctrine. Yeah, how dare you? And they like, you know, they now have this category of like your orthodoxy's at stake. And maybe they should do that. There are times where we need to love a brother enough to say, hey, what you're playing with here is fire, and you need to come back to safety. However, the thief on the cross is a great example. Does the thief on the cross have a rightly ordered doctrine of the Trinity? Probably not. Is the doctrine of the Trinity a primary doctrine? Definitely. So then, I think that what that shows us is he was ignorant of the categories. He was not denying the categories.
Yeah.
Now, that is different. If someone is a Mormon or a Jehovah's Witness and denies the orthodox account of the Trinity, that is not okay. Yeah. That's not just ignorance, that's denial, and we need to call them to repentance. But there is a difference between this brother or sister just needs theological discipleship.
Yeah, there's a teachability.
They don't need to be hunted.
There's a difference, you know, between the immature or newer Christian who has not encountered these things, at least in any substance, and when you say, hey, the church has taught and held, you know, from the very beginning that the biblical view of God is that he is a Trinity, and they go, oh, okay, you know,
that's what I
want to believe.
Exactly.
Whether they could have articulated it, you know, 5 minutes before you said that to them.
Yes.
There's a submission to the orthodoxy when it is taught. They're discipled well. So we wouldn't hold somebody who hasn't even encountered or at least been taught or discipled well.
Yes, that's exactly right.
We hold them to the same standards, but we have a different sort of expectation when there's an ignorance versus a deniability.
Yeah, I think that's a helpful little category of just making sure we're ministering well.
Yeah.
It's one thing to know reality. It's another thing to administer reality. And to administer reality well, you also have to know people, not just doctrine. So another one that I would say is just even on a pastoral, I would love to hear if you have any examples of this. There are sometimes where things can be tertiary at the church level that might be secondary at the elder level, meaning I don't require this of my members, but I'm probably going to be quite disappointed if another elder doesn't have this particular position. Reformed theology, for example, could be a good example.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm fine with a member not believing in expository preaching. That's what they're going to get if they're at my church. But another elder who's like, no, I think expository preaching is bad.
Yeah.
That's just not going to work, you know. So, yeah, there's more. I think I always want to name that sometimes we can have things that are in my secondary that might not be in yours. However, primary doctrine should be relatively consistent.
Yeah.
But there might be things like for me, it's not necessarily secondary, but it's getting into that category. The frequency with which we celebrate the Lord's Supper for me is quite important. And it's not the case that I would like immediately leave a church if they don't do the weekly Lord's Supper, but it's important enough for me that if I have two options, I'm probably going to choose the one that does.
Yeah.
So it's bumping into, but I know that I'm unique there. And that's okay. And so those are just a few nuances to make theological triage a wise principle.
Yeah. Well, this isn't room for nuance, so let's not do too many.
Yeah, there's not room for too much nuance.
Yeah.
That's right.
We'll do a little bit of nuance. We'll be nuanced about nuance, just like we're doing triage with triage.
There you go. Yes.
If you enjoy the podcast, dear listener, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen to or watch your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church.